This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
11 o'clock. As I said, yesterday, the 16th of June, was an important commemoration in South Africa. It always is. 48 years to the day where young South Africans in 1976 said, enough is enough. We will not be instructed to continue our schooling in a language that is far removed from our social reality, a difficult language in itself, the language of the oppressor at the time, and certainly to have Afrikaans medium instruction in schools at this stage in our high school career is a disadvantage for many of us. That issue then started to be reflective of broader issues around access, emancipation, opportunity, and the denial of those opportunities, and what young people were saying effectively. If we know that because of a disadvantage of language and culture, it's going to be difficult to complete our schooling careers, thus relegating us into those long, long lines of just being part of a labor force as opposed to being more meaningful, productive citizens of a country of our birth. In itself, it became a much bigger issue. And the 1976 uprisings, whilst they began in the classrooms, actually were symbolic of a much broader issue about justice, access, recognition, opportunity, and frankly, emancipation of the majority of citizens in this country. And so many people do say that it was the uprisings of 1976 that ultimately turned the momentum in the anti-apartheid struggle and really gave it that last gust of wind that a decade or so later finally saw the dismantling of apartheid, the release of political prisoners, and the ushering in of negotiations. And so young people are change makers in more ways than one. What we want to know today is, how can young people be change makers in the world we're in today? The context has changed, but that sense of agency doesn't need to have changed. If young people could and do advocate for a revolution of their time, what would that be? Especially given some of the many challenges that young South Africans face today. In a country that has an unemployment rate of 32% officially, as per Statistics South Africa, the majority of those unemployed are said to be people under the age of 30. 70% of unemployed South Africans are the youth, millennials, Gen Zs as well. So what is to be done? We're joined by Crystal Duncan-Williams, project lead for Youth Capital. Good morning, Crystal.
Good morning, Lerato.
And thank you for your time. And we're also joined by Mwegedzi Hwahela, who is the chairperson of the National Youth Coalition. Good morning, Mwegedzi.
Good morning, Lerato, and my fellow panelists and your viewers here.
Thank you so much. Mwegedzi, let's start with you, right, in terms of the National Youth Council, a vision of a post-apartheid era of a democratic order. And already, you know, back then, there was talk of how do you empower, include, and give access to young people. But if we speak to young people in 2024, on this 17th day of June, they would say, no, not enough is being done for us. And yet these institutions exist.
Yeah, you know, Lerato, so I mean, so for example, you know, as I was listening
about, you know, Mwegedzi, can I just interject, Mwegedzi? I'm sorry. I don't know whether you've just put us on speakerphone, but you suddenly became very distant.
Lerato?
Yes, much better. Okay, yes, you can go. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was just saying, you know, like when you were giving your introduction there, you talked about, you know, the the lives that were brutally lost about, you know, 48 years ago, that we commemorated yesterday, and that we really should commemorate every day, not on a specific day and month. And that's how really the National Youth Coalition came into existence, you know, specifically around, 2022, when we went into communities and we really just decided to bring, a diverse cohort of, youth formations within the civic society space, specifically to say what is coming out. That, at the time it was, of course, commemorating 46 years of, 1976. And for us, really wanted, young people to say, what has this democracy produced for you? So every young person who lives in Tshwane, Ekurhuleni, West Rand, Johannesburg, for example, in the Gauteng area, but also in other provinces, what are some of the, social contemporary issues that you are faced with, right, that make you, and that make you show up in a particular way in this democracy, right, of ours? And for us, really, what we really just discovered at the NYC is that, young people, in as much as there's research that may indicate that, young people don't turn out to vote, for example, and that young people are pathetic, but, to the contrary, young people are saying, no, but we are actually active in our communities, right? Oftentimes, the challenge that, young people are facing, specifically in communities, is that, Lerato, you find that opportunities in communities are politicized, right? So young people feel that, in order for me to gain access to opportunity, I must be a card-carrying member of a certain political party or whatever, right? But, when we do raise our hands, right, we must be seen to be presenting a particular view. But even if we do agree, if we disagree with certain views, then we're not given those opportunities. For us, really, at the NYC, we've then, even yesterday, we held our provincial convening at Constitutional Hill. We again listen to young people and just develop a youth charter that speaks to, contemporary social issues that young people are faced with and how we best work with this government of national unity that, we're anticipating its announcement, in terms of who will lead key positions and how we're going to engage collaboratively again with these coalitions that we're going to see, not only at a national level, but provincial level as well.
Okay, so there's a lot in terms of what you're saying. Young people are active, they are observant, citizens of their communities. They might not do politics in the conventional way that we see politicians do, address rallies, go to parliament, etc. But they have issues and they have platforms. And what they are saying, from what I've heard you say, is that they would like to live in a society where you can be given opportunities regardless of your political affiliation. And we shouldn't be living in a society that's founded on partisan views or patronage. Is that if you are a talented young person with great ideas, you shouldn't have to adjust those ideas to fit in with a particular status quo or political view just so that you can be a member of parliament or whatever the case may be, or participate in various government agencies. The merit should speak for itself.
And it's because of those merits that, for example, I mean, some of the seven key issues that, young people highlighted for us that, they said, they want to tackle is around, for example, decent work and employment, right? Quality education, health, gender, climate justice, governance, and arts and culture. And basically, really, these are the seven core pillars or issues that we as the NYC then decided to start working on that are affecting young people in the provinces that we are based. We've just set a goal for ourselves to say, if we start with these seven key issues, right, and let us look at how we start with those, seven key issues, whilst, we also try our best to courageously just build, the NYC, for example.
Have we lost the line? Mwegetsi Kwahle. Mwegetsi, good morning. Mwegetsi? Okay, I think we've lost him there, unfortunately. Christelle, perhaps you can come in and help us understand where young people find themselves in year 2024.
From your side, so I can hear you, and then I can't hear you.
Okay, we can hear you now. Unfortunately, okay. Something has happened there. Apologies.
Okay, no worries. I didn't hear the question. If you asked,
I was just going to say, if I was to ask you, the youth of 2024, what are the issues that matter to them most?
I think we have to remember that young people today, despite the world being a different place,
despite many things have changed, we all want to be happy. We want to feel safe. We want to know that we can provide for ourselves and our families. And we want to create a happy life. We want to feel happy, and we want to give our children a happy life as well. I think as much as young people today are different from young people of 1976, I think they also want fair and equal access to opportunities of education and employment. And while that fight might look different, the fight continues.
Fair and equal opportunities. Mwekezi, before his line dropped, was talking about fair and equal opportunities, access even in various political platforms or public entities, for instance. And there's a sense that those are ring-fenced, that the youth can be active in many spheres, but not at the decision-making table. Do you agree with that view?
Unfortunately, yes. You know, Youth Capital's been around for 6.5 years and came into existence to address exactly that challenge. And to some degree, it's encouraging to see, you know, with Parliament opening on Friday, we saw quite a few younger faces taking an oath and being sworn into the National Assembly. And so there's, you know, there's hints of change, but nearly not enough. You know, 6.5 years is a long time, and it still feels as though young people are excluded from places of decision-making where the power really lies. And so young people are left in communities trying to solve the challenges on their own. But without the support of government and even the private sector to change right. the system in which they have to operate.
You know, can I challenge that view a little bit, Crystal, just by way of being a devil's advocate? So let's just say, let's use electricity as an example. Okay, so if you rely on the municipality or the state, then you're on an Eskom line and then you're vulnerable to the decisions that are made around Eskom, be it load shedding, load reduction, whatever, you never really know. But if you came together, formed a mini cooperative, invested in a couple of solar panels, you'd get off the grid, you'd have the energy, and you would have problem solved. And so some people are saying that access to political systems isn't really empowerment in its truest sense. It's resources that allow you to go and self-actualize in many other spheres. So sometimes are young people clamoring for spaces that ultimately really aren't going to empower them?
I think that it's sad that we've gotten here, because in a democratic country, one would think we have basic public services, which are the mandate of the state to fulfill, like you say, electricity, water, public transport. Mm. If we look at the developed world, these are things that people don't have to worry about. That frees people up to become innovative thinkers around other things and problem solve and create income generation for themselves. But when one's mind has to be taken up with, am I going to be able to shower today because there's no water? Am I going to have electricity to charge my laptop to attend an interview?
Sorry about that.
You know, then it doesn't free one up to partake in society at the levels one would hope. Sorry, I have a bit of a cold.
Okay, what you should do, you know what, I can relate to it. Fortunately, it doesn't carry by osmosis over the radio. But let me ask you to go and get yourself a drink of water. And then let's bring Zama Kanyase into the conversation, national spokesperson for the ANC Youth League. Good morning, Zama.
Good morning, and thank you for having us.
No, it's our pleasure. So the conversation we were sort of embarking on with Crystal before she had to get a sip of water is that really and truly, is politics the only conduit through which young people can meaningfully participate? Are there other things and other ways in which young people can make their voice heard and their power felt? And what Crystal was saying is, yes, indeed, but those political systems do matter, because if you can't have electricity to write your exams or prepare for your exams or run your small business, then it doesn't matter that you're a self-starter. The politics has failed you. And you're sitting right there in the middle of the center of power as the ANC Youth League.
Well, I must say that politics are the basis of development of any country, are the basis of creation of platforms and opportunities for people to strive in whatever it is that they would like to get involved in or build their future around. So she is indeed correct that politics are vital. That is why as the ANC Youth League, we had continuously called for inclusion of young people in key positions of power decision-making platforms. And just quickly to go through it, indeed, we have seen not just the ANC making sure that their list to parliament, for example, would include young people, but even other political parties were seeing them that they are also coming along. And that is very important because as our society gets younger and younger, we need young people to occupy these spaces because they bring in new ideas. Those who have been there before us have the experience in terms of the operation, but we bring in the new ideas. We bring in ideas that challenge the status quo. So politics are very important, and young people must take them serious. And, of course, young people must continue to mobilize themselves, even in terms of organizations. They may necessarily be political. They may be business-orientated or organizations that seek to transform society in any way. But obviously, politics remain a key role, a key players in terms of or platform rather, to transform the society that we live in.
Okay, so let me ask you in terms of within the governing party, ruling party, whatever the terminology you prefer is, how much of a voice does the Youth League actually have in setting the agenda of the country?
Well, I just want to quote a few instances where we've found ourselves starting to begin to be influential as the ANC Youth League. Towards the end of the sixth administration, unfortunately, we were elected as the sixth administration was about to conclude its work and go towards elections.
Yeah.
But the ANC Youth League had said it, that one of some of the many challenges we find ourselves in as a country would easily be solved by a strengthened economy. When everyone is participating in the economy, it means that everyone has the means to participate in the economy. And for us to do that, young people need to be employed. People in South Africa in general, beyond just young people, need to be employed and have an income. And we said one of the major ways of doing that, it is to make sure that our mineral resources remain in South Africa. We have we're rich in mineral resources, but year in, year out, we're transporting our raw materials outside to create jobs for other countries. And whatever we have transported out comes back as finished goods that that cost an arm and a leg. And we said 70% of our mineral resources must remain in South Africa. Not more than 30% only must be transported out. And the president had started to pronounce on that as well in his speeches. And that meant that we had started to influence their way of thinking to say that we'll never solve our issues as long as there's no way in which we are going to create jobs. Not to change our situation, and we are hopeful that in this seventh administration he will carry that into it.
Okay. Crystal Duncan Williams, have you had your sip of water?
Yes, I have. Thank you.
Are you feeling better?
A little bit. Okay. I am recovering from a cold, but I'm doing my best.
I know what that feels like. Okay, so please, over to you, and please make the point you wanted to make earlier.
Sure. So I was saying, you know, we can say, and I think we're seeing this more and more with the private sector, saying the government has failed. We're going to form co-ops. We're going to, you know, put our money, put our private money into this. But when you start investing money into things that the government should provide for, you're taking investment away from stimulating the economy or those innovations that I mentioned. And so I think it's all fine and well to say young people come together and try to solve the issues themselves. But there's always going to be a ceiling as to how far that can go. And also speaking about young people, and you know, you often hear this, oh, young people should just start a business, or young people aren't innovative enough, they don't think for themselves. Hmm. I think we should ask ourselves, take yourself back to when you were 18 or 19 or 20, and you hadn't had a work experience. Yeah. It's maybe you were fortunate that your parents worked, but imagine living in a household where nobody is employed, which is becoming more and more the reality of young people as we continue to have intergenerational cycles of unemployment. Mm. 18, 10 young people have never worked before. They've never had formal employment. Now, when you don't understand the world of work, you don't understand business, how on earth are you supposed to manage money, you know, whether it's a stockpile to, you know, grow produce and sell the excess, all of these things, without some kind of training or mentorship or coaching, it's an impossible ask to ask young people to have to do this on their own. So I think we have to be realistic about, I often think we are unrealistic about the expectations we put on young people,
right.
As a way to kind of alleviate ourselves of the guilt right. that we should carry for the situation that young people face today.
Yeah, I see we've also got Moeketsi Hwahela back. So when we come back, we'll be asking you, Moeketsi, what are unrealistic expectations of young people? It's news time.
Power Talk, 9 a.m. to noon.
All right, this is Power Talk. I'm Lerato Mbele. Thank you so much for joining us. And we are just reflecting on what it is to be a young person in 2024. 48 years ago, young people of high school age, school-going age, collectively decided that, frankly, enough was enough. A repressive, oppressive government had gone too far. Not only had they marginalized and persecuted their parents, but they were now coming into the school terrain to do exactly that. And young people felt that maybe it was time to question the establishment, to challenge the status quo, and see if you can break that bastion of structural racism and a very violent nationalist police. And so the uprisings of June 1976 began, very, very violent. Police using live rounds on young children as young as 12 years old, chasing down smaller children, you know, in the quell to arrest this uprising. But for many people, it became a turning point. This huge violation of human rights became a turning point in the anti-apartheid struggle, because it's the one thing that sort of re-energized the struggle, gave much more of a momentum on the international movement for sanctions. It laid the foundation work for the United Democratic Movement later on. And a decade later, those first talks began secretly in Senegal. And 12 or so years later, the unbanning of political organizations took place, and the release of leaders from prison, and then the return of exile. So many people do credit young people for really creating the much needed impetus to finally break the back of an apartheid system. And so the question is, in 2024, the circumstances have changed fundamentally. But if young people were to say, this is our revolution, what would it look like? And many experts have said it would be social, it would be about justice, and it probably would be around issues of job creation, climate change, and reimagining the future. So what of South Africa's youth in being part of this international global movement for change, as agitated for by the youth? Moeketsi Hwahela, you are back with us, chairperson of the National Youth Coalition. So for you, what is the struggle of young people in 2024? And by struggle, I don't mean the hardship. I mean the issues that matter to young people today. And are we unreasonable in our expectations of what young people can and cannot do? Moeketsi, we're still having that problem with you again. I'm not sure whether you want to speak to us on speakerphone because it's easier for you, but it's creating a huge distance between yourself and the receptor. It's not working at all. We're going to go back.
Hello?
Oh, yes, much better.
Can you hear me now?
Much better. Go ahead.
Yeah, apologies about these networks. Yeah, it's the third force, but we're not going to allow them. Young people are going to speak.
Go.
No, but I think I just want to piggyback on, I want to respond by piggybacking on the when you're playing devil's advocate and you're speaking with my colleague from Youth Capital. I just want to say, I do think it's important for us to say young people must be allowed the benefit, you know, to participate without even having political affiliation, right? Because I think, you know, one of the unrealistic expectations that we have, Lerato, particularly as it relates to young people, is that, for example, in order for me to participate in politics as we know them, right? I must be part of a, you know, again, certain political party. And I know that, you know, the last year we passed the electoral amendment bill that has allowed us, to now have independent candidates.
Mm.
But again, you know that also doesn't make space for the fact that, politics, requires money. For you to run a campaign, you require money, right? And that is why it is so important then for young people to participate, at a local level. And let me tell you why. Even my colleagues from, the youth league just mentioned this around organizing and mobilizing, right? Because here's the thing, right? It's important to talk about issues at a national level and a provincial level. But Lerato, at the end of the day, we all sleep in a municipal ward. What that means is that the quality of our lives is generally dependent on the people that we live at a local level, right? Most of us as young people, our first interface with government is not the President of the Republic of South Africa. It's with our local councillors, right? And that is why we as young people, it's so important to participate at a local level especially. And that is how you start mobilizing and organizing for change at a long-term level, right? And that is why it's also important for us as young people, Lerato, to follow up after the vote. And what that means is, so for example, all the political parties who have made it to parliament, right? And we need to check the list of members that they said these are the people who are going to parliament, right? And in terms of the proportion of seats that they bought, how many, and you asked this earlier on, how many young people have actually made it, right? So, for example, the colleague who's in platform from the youth league, I can pinpoint to the fact that, when we look at their list, for example, in terms of the young people, two young people who were on that list didn't actually make it, but they actually fell within, the numbers of which they would have made it to parliament.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So, for us, in terms of, again, just to answer your question in a way in which I'm circling back, some of these, unsaid realistics and expectations is that, again, we want young people to be involved, but again, we don't want to give them the opportunity to be involved. But also, it's also important that, young people are diverse. We must also speak about young people who are living with disabilities. Right, they also need, to be part of the table because they are facing particular challenges that Mwekezi, who is able-bodied, doesn't know about. So therefore, they are sometimes, they are best placed to tell us of these are my issues as someone who's on a wheelchair or who's experiencing a certain or who's living with a certain different body and all those things. Yeah, Lerato.
I'm gonna continue being a devil's advocate, Mwekezi. So just bear with me. And again, it's this idea that politics is the game changer, is what I'm challenging. And I'll tell you why I'm saying this. So, yes, we all live in communities where there are potholes, there are water outages, there's electricity outages. We then have to confront a councillor. And so you realize that representation matters because if you don't know your councillor, that transformer might be out for 6 months versus 6 hours, right? So that level of community involvement matters. But when we look at how climate change is now front and center of a global multilateral agenda, it was brought to the fore by young people. Young people in the form of Greta Thunberg, Vanessa Nakata, and many others started their protests in Uganda, in Kampala, and in Sweden, and eventually became a global movement. A global movement that ultimately forced leaders at United Nations level to start having climate conversations, to start changing the agenda at COP, to incorporate some of these issues into an expanded definition of sustainable development goals. And there's now no international forum, not a single one. Whatever issues we may be dealing with, COVID and climate, environment or agriculture and climate, global financing and climate financing. Young people have changed the context. And these were all teenagers when it happened. If we think about, what young people are doing in music and Hollywood and how they then use their voice to raise issues around sexual violence, gender discrimination, using their artistry, their music to do these kinds of things. I've just come back from the Caribbean, where young people were at the forefront of raising conversations around how do we include Africans in the diaspora into the conversations of development in Africa and vice versa. Young people were at the forefront of this thing. If we look at how the world has been transformed through tech, were it not for teenagers in their parents' garages, one, a young Bill Gates launching Microsoft. A generation later, a Mark Zuckerberg in his mother's and father's garage launching Facebook. And then later on, the young people who then came up with Uber, Twitter, even Elon Musk, you know, for all intents and purposes, was quite young. If we don't tap into that creative agency, that business acumen, that entrepreneurship, that drive, that innovation of young people, it doesn't change the world. And none of those things happen within a political context, is what I'm saying. So in an enabling environment, should young people be so obsessed with being part of political structures?
They should. I would disagree with you. Like they should, and I'll tell you why. Lerato, you may not be interested in politics, but politics is interested in you, right? Yes, I agree with you. It is important, very important, Lerato, for young people to be involved in other sectors like the creative economy and all those things. In fact, we as the NYC have partnered up with the Basha Wu Festival this coming between the 27th and the 29th, where we'll be engaging young people who are in the creative sector within the coalition and other youth movements to say, you know, looking at entrepreneurship and all those things. However, in addition to that, Yarab, you know, the people that you just mentioned now, your, you know, Elon Musk, your Bill Gates, and a whole set
Zuckerberg,
of other
Zuckerberg, Greta Thunberg.
Yes, who started things, you know, from their family garages and all those things, right? Right now, I mean, when was it? About plus minus 3 months ago, right? We saw, you know, for example, in the United States, for example, they're trying to ban TikTok, right? We're also seeing that, again, yes, it's important for us as young people to be involved in these other sectors, but also realizing that, you know, they're also in close proximity to politics. And, you know, even as you're talking about, well, Greta Thunberg and, you know, some of the things that you witnessed in me in the Caribbean, you know, for me, it just reminded me of that quote that says, you know, the personal is political, right? And again, I think we also need to have a counterintuitive thinking, perhaps, Lerato, when it comes to politics and the way we've known politics. Because again, you know, there's a particular way in every country that you go to, when you grow up, you understand politics to only be about, you know, marching and all these things, or, you know, conferences and whatever. That is why it's so important for us as young people to, you know, just from what you're saying, playing devil's advocate, to redefine what politics looks like, right? Because at the end of the day, even those young people who are in those creative sectors, who are in the governance sector, who are in the civic sector, or whichever sector that you're in, at the end of the day, you are a citizen of a country, of a nation. You do need to go out and vote.
Okay, fair enough.
And when you vote, you're going to vote for what? For certain issues that speak to you. So, like Igna Lerato, I care about media, communications, radio. So I'm going to elect an independent or a political party that is going to advance the radio space, right? Or the importance of media, right? So we can't divorce ourselves from politics, because Lerato, politicians are powerful people, right? Okay. Politics is personal, because politicians are the ones who are deciding whether Gausani, the price of bread goes up, the petrol, you know, we might not see it, but when you actually sit down and you unpack it, you will see how politicians, our own judiciary is appointed by politicians. There is a committee where politicians are seen, and those things are public, they're live, right? So we must also, as young people, participate and lobby for the issues that we care about, right? And we can advance them so that, again, this world and this South Africa that we live in has a much more equal and fairer thing.
Right. So, well said. And let's bring in others. So if I've understood you correctly, Moeketsi, you're saying politics need not be the platform, but nonetheless, it is the consequence. Because even if we're talking climate change, it starts off as school protests, but it becomes policy at a political level. Even if we're talking about innovation in a garage, those innovations then get decided on by senates as to whether or not you're using too much tech, not enough tech, etc. So ultimately, the politicians do come into the equation. And what you want is the politicians not to stand in the way of advancements and progress, but to be part of the journey of progress. And so there's a symbiosis.
And that is why, you know, oftentimes when we talk about employment, we often say, you know, politicians, it's not your job as a politician to create jobs. And but to enable an environment that is going to allow people who are the young people who are creative, the young people who want to start things, industries and whatever, right? To be in an enabling environment. And that is why, you know, I like what you just said, Megan, in terms of policy. You know, young people to know what it's like to create policy, right? And start again at that local level. In the South African context, will be starting just attending your IDP meetings. Like the integrated development planning meetings, or even Lerato, attending your street committee meetings, like these WhatsApp groups that we are part of in our communities, in our sections or in our extensions.
Yeah.
Be in that thing, know what are the issues that people are dealing with in your community,
right,
so that when you're able to advance those issues in your local municipality. Again, I'm just using that at just a local level just to show you how again it links to, you know, all these things, they connect. It links to the broader, you know, the specifics and so on.
I do like what you're saying, and it's as simple as saying if you're involved in your community, then whilst your parents are arguing, say for argument's sake, that we need to rezone land for a cemetery, you could say no, we need to be setting up fiber optic cables, we need Wi-Fi. And if you're not in those meetings, the land will be allocated for the cemetery versus getting those lines done for Wi-Fi and broadband. So if you're not there, then your things don't get put on the agenda. Crystal, I don't know if you want to come in on this devil advocate's point and the synergy between the lived experience of being a young person and influencing and galvanizing for policy to change.
Yes, I think that young people are very active in the ways of communication that they're used to. You know, you can easily see, I mean, you spoke about Greta and the climate crisis, and now that's become front and center, and really a movement driven by young people there, but that was through the means of social media. And I'm not sure that our government is as responsive to social media advocacy as perhaps the European governments are, or even the American governments are. And so I think we could leverage that more. It's probably a product of the fact that many people in government have been in those positions for a long time and are extremely out of date and out of touch with the realities there. But I think we're always saying that politicians need to meet young people where they are, and that's 100% what's needed. But, you know, to what Moriketsi has said, now that we have come through the dust is settling after elections, we really have to take up our young people. We have to take up our power as citizens and say we made our mark, and now we're going to hold you accountable to the promises that you made.
Right.
And we don't have to do that alone. You know, those of us on this call from civil society are trying to create spaces for young people to put their voice and the questions around accountability to the right decision makers. But young people need to realize their power, and that actually we have a great constitution for holding government to account. But generally, as South Africans, young and old, we don't do that very well.
Okay. I want to go to Zama, but before I do that, you know, so many issues impact the ability of young people just to self-actualize. We're told about the state of the education system in the country, that many young people come out of high school, even university, and they're not workplace ready, right? It's been said time and again that it's not that kids aren't coming out of school. It's what the schools are teaching them. And those schools are run by the government for all intents and purposes. So there's so much disconnect. And I think this is why young people just feel despondent, is that you tell them to be part of the system, but at the end of the road, the system seems to have sabotaged them. And I don't know how that can be resolved.
Absolutely. It's one of, you know, we've got three key advocacy asks for the next political administration. And one of them is really having industry lead what the skills should be, because I think for government to lead is doing it the wrong way around. And that's possibly why we're in this position. We have a rather conservative education system. And there are some entities like E-Cubed who are working around, you know, what they term entrepreneurial mindset, which really speaks to these soft skills, you know, the term that we throw around. But the kinds of things that when talking about AI and the 21st century workplace-based skills, we need, you know, very technical skills that can be taught, and then we need the softer stuff: grit, resilience, empathy, teamwork, strategic thinking, analytical thinking. And these kinds of things are really not kind of front and center and woven within our current curriculum at basic education level. Mm. So there is some move from government to do that, but we definitely need more. We often hear young people saying they weren't given good advice on what to go and study, so they spend years studying, struggling through that degree, only to find themselves unemployed at the end of it. Mm. And hearing more and more of these stories, you know, young people going and studying business administration at a TVET college, there are thousands of young people who sit with, you know, basically nothing to show for their efforts.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we are kind of setting young people up to fail because we're not giving them the right tools and we're not giving them the right information to make a good choice.
Okay. Zama, I want to bring you in here because there's a disconnect is what I'm hearing about here. Is there's politicians and the policies that they think are good for country and young people. And then there's the reality of a young person who then is a consumer of that policy and finds that it didn't serve them well. And it's coming up with what's being studied at TVET colleges, schools, etc., etc. Is, you know, we get told this is the curriculum and then at the end we get told the market can't absorb you.
I think if we can just observe the progress of our country since our democracy, I think one of the things that had been prioritized was stabilizing the country, getting everyone at least at the door of education. And I think as we build up, you can just see that in the beginning it's been, let's prioritize the important things first. And people must have food to eat, must have shelter, must have at least have some sort of education. And I think as we move forward, as we build onto it, because I think in any country, like we're a developing country now as South Africa, but eventually we'd all like to end up being a developed country. So I think as we move forward, now you have doors of education open. Basic education, you can get it for free in South Africa. And at a certain extent, higher tertiary institutions as well.
Mm.
So now the issue is let's transform our education system to one that is now going to respond to the needs of our society today. And I think those are discussions that all of us must have. And as I've been observing my colleagues in Youth Transformation here, I've been very happy about the inputs because now it says everyone needs to be involved, even if you are apolitical, you're in organizations that are apolitical, but your views are valid. You know, the Youth League has been pushing that these TVET colleges, for example, you just mentioned them, in different societies, must match the economy landscape of that area. I come from the coastline in KwaZulu-Natal, and there the ocean is basically our main source of economy in terms of tourism and in terms of other opportunities that can be there in the ocean economy. So that means our TVET colleges also need to offer maritime studies in their different types and levels so that we can respond to our economic needs in that area. Other areas have agriculture as you know, as the need. So I think all of those conversations need all of us and politics need to enable such platforms so that we can move forward as a country.
I want to stay with you, Zama. A comment was made by Mweketsi earlier on is that, you know, when you look at, say, the ANC's party list, and I know that with the election, 71 of those names had to fall off because the ANC lost below 50% of its, it didn't acquire 50% that's required to lead. But a lot of those 71 people who are not going to parliament are the young people who are on the list. So in other words, the young people are not sitting high up on the lists. We talk about a generational shift. We talk about a need for representation. But when these technicalities happen in an election, young people again find themselves pushed out of opportunities. And yet you go to countries like France, they elected a man in his 40s as president. Italy did the same thing. Austria also did that. And so in many countries of the world, a president does not need to be a man who is 70-something. A president can be somebody who is mid-30s to 40s. And that's not going to happen in South Africa for as long as we still appoint people on party lists and in the same using the same formula. What do you make of that?
Well, let me just firstly mention that, you know, the NEC of the Youth League alone has 15 people in parliament. The ANC, I'm just going to talk about the ANC, I'm going to talk about the other parties, has more than 20 young people in parliament. In provincial legislatures, we do have some young people from our PECs, and in Eastern Cape already, we have a deputy speaker in the legislature. So I think, at least with the calls, the Youth League has been very vocal about this, if you follow us. We have not minced our words on it, and in fact, would rather invite young people to strengthen this voice, that young people must be in corridors of power. We have never minced our words on this, and we've even gone further to say that even different boards, we need young people. In the ESCOM board that keeps on having challenges, we know for a fact that if young people can be included, because we do have qualified young people, our government has ensured that they have access to higher education, and they are qualified, and they have the experience that is always being asked. We have other 35s who are actually even having experience now, and they must be included. There's no way moving about it. We just invite everyone to continue pushing the call for young people to be included.
Okay, and that's a rebuttal, Mweketsi. I don't know if you've got something to say to that.
No, mine is to say thank you for the platform. As young people, let us mobilize ourselves.
Okay, your line again has failed us, but as young people, let us mobilize ourselves. Crystal, as we round off this conversation, I want to bring up one issue here, which is important. Many young people are really struggling with issues of mental health and despair. In fact, you know, young people often say, the Gen Z say, the mere fact that mental health has become corporate policy for many, many organizations because young people brought it to the fore. And it's something that needs to be discussed. But you know, the social challenges that young people are grappling with, the addictions that young people are numbing their pain with, from drugs to alcohol, even to sex, some people would say, it's a difficult time for young people across the world.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I've mentioned before, just, you know, imagine the mental health challenges. You know, you're in communities that aren't safe. And now you have pressure from your family saying, I've given you all the money, I've given you the grant money we have in the house for you to look for work for months and months. You haven't found anything. This must be your fault. That internalization of that failure. And then, you know, you're on social media and you're hearing about the plight of Gaza and the climate crisis. Like, these things weigh heavily on young people. They're bombarded by these really complex challenges on top of their own very personal struggles and their own personal troubles. It's a lot. And again, I'm going to say this is, you know, we should have a government that provides access to a public health service that includes mental health support. But historically, mental health support has been way down on the list of priorities. And we know that even, you know, basic health services and primary health care facilities across the country are failing. And so, again, we need to hold our government to account. We need to investigate and interrogate the budgeting processes of what the Department of Health gives and how that money is spent, and why we continue to shortchange mental health in this conversation. It should really be central to advancing young people and making them fit and able for work and become productive members of society.
Zama Kanyisa, National Spokesperson for the ANC Youth League. I'll give you the last word in terms of, you know, how young people can be supported through these very emotional, challenging times that they that we are all facing, but that seem to afflict them even more.
You know, I think they need hope. And I think as our seventh administration enters, and as I've just stated how we have also sent young people to Parliament, I think all of them need to just reciprocate our support with actual work. We need hope. I think as much as our institutions, our health institutions also need to step up in terms of making sure that whilst we deal with the bigger problems, because we know what's the cause of the problem. The cause of the problem is youth unemployment. The cause of the problem is uncertainty about your future. That is why you have young people who are in drugs, because they have enough time on their hands. They don't know what to do with their time. They are frustrated. So the bigger solution is provide provision of jobs and participation in the economy. But in the meantime, our health facilities also need to play their role, and our leaders need to give hope to young people.
Thank you so much for your time. Zama Kanyisa, National Spokesperson for the ANC Youth League. Crystal Duncan-Williams, Project Lead at Youth Capital. And yes, with a bit of a patchy line, we had Mweketsi Hwaela, who is from the National Youth Coalition. It's just been a reflection on being young in South Africa today as we make our own observances of National Youth Day yesterday, the 16th of June, 2024, 48 years after the moment that shook the world. It's news time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.